Estás escuchando LP Podcast.
Buenas noches a todos los conectados a nuestra sesión de LP. Saludos a todas las latitudes donde se encuentren, acá desde México. Espero que vaya todo bien durante esta pandemia de locos. Veo que hay mucha gente conectada, amigos, conocidos, en todos lados del mundo. ¿Cómo están? Hoy tenemos un disco icónico del rock industrial. Venimos con el Downward Spiral de Nine Inch Nails, un disco que fue lanzado el 8 de marzo del 94, producido por Trent Reznor y Flood en el estudio Le Pic. Vamos a escuchar todo el álbum seguido con un par de intervenciones. Buenas noches, Mauro, ¿cómo estás? ¿Cómo va todo? Alejo, ¿qué onda?
Hola, Manu, ¿cómo va todo?
Hola a todos, ¿cómo van? Sí, el disco, otro disco muy clave de los 90s, del 94. Básicamente el disco que llevó el rock industrial como a lo comercial y lo impulsó, digamos, a lo máximo, ¿no? Ya venía el industrial como desde los 70s, 80s, como en una escena muy underground, y Trent Reznor y amigos, de hecho, lo sacaron ya como para el público ya grande, ¿no? Un tema comercial. Entonces, pues nada, un discazo, ya todo lo hemos oído muchas veces, pero hoy también, como la vez pasada con Korn, es muy especial porque nuestro invitado es muy especial.
Bueno, buenas noches a todos. Gracias a los que se conectaron. Estamos viendo con mucho agrado cómo va creciendo también este grupo y este parche. Este también es para mí un disco muy especial y ha marcado gran parte de mi carrera de sonido, y es una delicia poderlo escuchar aquí en compañía de ustedes y en compañía de Chris. Y bueno, nada, que lo disfruten, que disfruten la sesión, que disfruten las respuestas y pues todo lo que tiene Chris para contarnos.
Alejo, Mauro, hoy tenemos un invitado muy especial para nuestra sesión de hoy. Es Chris Fossil, production de Nine Inch Nails, durante uno de sus tours más complejos técnicamente hablando. Es el Tension Tour del 2013. Les cuento un poquito acerca de Chris. Empezó como en el 89 más o menos, cuando empezó a ayudar a un amigo que tocaba bajo en una banda en San Francisco, y básicamente el favor se volvió una carrera. Muchos años tourió como backline tech, como técnico de backline, se volvió después stage manager, y más o menos en el 97 empezó a trabajar con de production manager de un super artista que se llama Beck. Ahora lleva más de 28 años tureando alrededor del mundo, ha trabajado básicamente como production manager y ha trabajado como tour manager. No hay una gran diferencia ahí. Stage manager, rigger, tour accountant y promoter representative. Ha tureado con super mega artistas como Primus, Helmet, Stone Temple Pilots, Soul Coffin, Tenacious D, Rammstein, Beck, Foo Fighters, Sheryl Crow, Michael Bublé, Katy Perry, Beastie Boys, David Byrne, Macklemore y, por supuesto, Nine Inch Nails. Hello, Chris. Welcome to LP. How are you?
Great. How are you guys?
We're great. Very good, man. Very good.
Good, good.
So, Chris, first of all, welcome to the show. This is our little show. Thank you for your time. Thank you for doing this. It's a pleasure to be here with you. Listen to some music, have a beer, chat, and here what we want to do is like learn from your experience. As you know, Mauricio is our music guru. He's a well-known musician here in Colombia and a great guitar player. Manuel is our production guy. He's done various shows of all kind, and I'm a sound engineer and I have a studio also, and I work mostly on sound for film. Here in the group, what we have is like friends. We're all related in one thing, and that's music. We either collect, do, produce, mix, whatever, music. We're talking every day about music in our little chat we have, and we're having these sessions every Thursday. Because of coronavirus, we just decided to like create this little bar where we listen to complete albums and invite somebody who can, you know, like give us, you know, positive and useful feedback. That's like the main idea of the group. You can find here in the group chefs, doctors, lawyers, where we have different professions. Thank you for being here. Thanks to everybody who's connected, and let's have a great time.
Sounds great.
Chris.
Yes.
Can you tell us, how was your first encounter with Nine Inch Nails? I mean, how do you get in with the band, with the production? How's the story?
I was actually called by their management to come in and take over because Trent had just fired somebody, which was not unusual. And this is actually the second time that happened. Another time I couldn't do it because I was on an airplane going somewhere else. And this time, same thing. I could not do it because I was on tour with someone else. But I agreed to go to Los Angeles and meet Trent. And if we seemed like we saw eye to eye, then maybe I could be the guy who could be there and not get fired. So I flew to Los Angeles and I met Trent. And he was a really nice guy. And before I even got to the airport, they had text me saying, we want to hire you right now. So it all worked out, luckily, and I started working for him 2 days later. And yeah, it's a great tour. I really enjoyed working with him. Probably one of the best artist bosses I've ever had.
Even though he's a tough one, right?
He's tough for a lot of people, I think. And what I mean by that is he's a man who knows what he wants. He's a very, very clear communicator. And so you have to be able to communicate clearly back with him and not him and ha. If you don't have an answer, then you're not going to be around very long when he has a question. So, but I really enjoyed working with him. I thought he was a great communicator and I thought he was very fair. And to be a part of this huge process of taking a vision that was in his mind and trying to make it real, so that by the time the first conversation he had with me about wanting to do something to us actually implementing into a show and watching the crowd's reaction, being part of that process was pretty darn amazing. And it's all in his mind's eye and you're just trying to help make it happen.
When you get a call and they're asking you to do a job and be part of the production of a band, mm-hmm. Do you usually bring your own crew? Do you have the chance to pick your own crew, or you're just they assign you a team?
It depends. In that particular situation, I walked into a team that was already established, so I didn't need to bring anybody. I only needed to add or supplement as the tour grew larger and larger. So it really depends on the scenario. You know, me, like most production managers, we're not coming in to try to change the way they operate, but really just help out and support them with the skill set we have and then try to build it stronger.
But usually, how does it work? Like usually, like most bands?
Yeah, most production managers have a circle of crew that they tour with, absolutely. I had the same stage manager for 10 or 11 years who's turned into a really close friend of mine. But it's not always that way. And that's part of being a good production manager. You have to be able to manage people. And
of course,
a lot of times you're managing people who are strangers one day and you're seeing them for 14 hours a day the next. And the next.
For 6 months.
Yes. And that's just another one of the great challenges. Not only the technical challenges or logistical challenges, there's the personal challenges of dealing with all the different personalities out there. Yeah, it's a great job.
Yeah, Chris. So speaking about those challenges, you've worked with really complex productions, no? Like in rock, like Nine Inch Nails and Rammstein, for example. What can you tell us about your experience working with these like huge, complex productions?
I don't think I've ever worked with one that was more complex than Nine Inch Nails. And the reason why is it wasn't just a cookie cutter, okay, once those lights are right, that keep them that way all the time. Things were constantly evolving and evolving into different shows, which I thought was amazing because Trent doesn't want to go around the world twice and give the crowd in London the same show, you know, 6 months later, 8 months later. And those are great challenges. And I appreciate the vision and the respect he has for his fans to make sure that he's constantly being creative with them. And so that was a big challenge of a tour. Now, when I toured with Rammstein, that was a long time ago, I stage managed them. That was a lot different because I showed up with a bunch of guys who didn't really want to be there. And now you end up just managing people and it's not so much about the technical side of it. By the end of it, they were all great people and we all got along great and we ran the tour very efficiently and it was a lot of fun. And I still have a lot of good friends from way back then too. You just have to take each one differently. Each one's a totally different job that you have to approach differently. If you try to approach it the same way every time, there are guys out there who do that. They don't last very long because they're maybe not open-minded enough to adapt to the situation they're in.
Chris, what differences do you find working in different continents? I mean, it's obviously different work in South America than working in US and Europe, Australia maybe, Asia, even Asia. What are the main differences that you find?
Oh man, there's so many differences, you know. As you go to different continents and different countries, you're dealing with different cultures, and different cultures do things differently than you might do in your home culture. So yeah, there's a lot of things to think about. Power, obviously, power voltage. When you're traveling with electronics, you got to be prepared for that. That's a big thing. Obviously, language barrier sometimes. We were talking about that Rammstein tour I did. We had an interpreter who spoke 17 languages because we hit all of Eastern Europe, and so we needed somebody just to get us through some days. There's a language barrier. And then, of course, the big thing is when you travel with a large group of people or the visas that you have to get and so on and so forth. So it's all part of logistics that we have to take into account when we travel and try to think ahead, two steps when you're getting ready to go somewhere. And try not to forget any of the major pieces, because obviously you do, it can be a real problem.
You know what? Once I worked with Red Hot Chili Peppers,
yeah.
And they forgot a huge stand with guitars.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's a hard one.
Yeah, that happens. That happens. Yeah, that's funny. Yeah, well, here's a great example. The last time when I was with Nine Inch Nails in South America last, we had built three different systems, lighting systems. And we were moving them between, we had a Japan system, we had a Australia, New Zealand system, and we had a South America system. And when I was in Los Angeles sorting them all out, I accidentally put the main power distribution for the Australia system in with the container that went to Santiago.
Oh, man.
So we only discovered this after I came off a plane from Tokyo, landed in Sydney, went right into rehearsal and figured this out. Luckily, we fixed the problem. It just took a little time and money, but big joke for 6 weeks by our lighting crew chief saying, "I can't believe you screwed this up." And I said, "Oh, I'm sure I didn't screw it up. You'll find out when you get to Santiago." So I had to send him ahead to Santiago while the rest of us were in Mexico City. Soon as he opened the C container, the very first piece off was the power distro for Australia. So he took a picture and sent it to me, of course, to say, you were wrong for once, so take that. Anyway, things like that, you try not to miss any pieces, but it happens. And so you have to come up with a plan B, if you will, and hopefully nobody is the wiser. So yes, everybody in Australia didn't know that we were using a secondary power system. So I'm glad nobody noticed. And then we had to carry around an extra one all through South America.
Okay, Chris. So you've obviously worked with a lot of artists, different types of personalities, different types of music, different types of gear, tech specs, everything. How would you describe the perfect artist to work with?
Oh man, they're all perfect. I've been really lucky in my 28 years of touring that I've worked with all really amazing artists, and all for different reasons. Just like, if I sat down and had a beer with each of you tonight, tomorrow I'd have a different view of how much I respected each of you, and for the different reasons I would. So to say a perfect artist is really hard. They're all challenging in different ways. And some are easier to get along with, and some aren't, and some are more laid back. here's a good segue. I worked with Nine Inch Nails. We toured for maybe 2 years, I think, on the Tension tour, just under 2 years. And then from there, I transitioned to working for Macklemore and Ryan Lewis. And working for Trent, someone who notices everything on stage all the time and wants everything to be perfect, and then transitioning to Macklemore and Ryan Lewis, where those guys just want to show up and everything be right and go. So I had to pull together a rehearsal so we could all get acquainted with the guys and understand it. They were at the rehearsal for 15 minutes, were completely bored out of their minds and said, "Great, are you guys good? We're leaving now." And also, Macklemore and Ryan Lewis, great artists, awesome guys to work with. They just, it's just a different thing. So you have to adapt and conquer to that. And I still work for Macklemore to this day. I've been with him for 5 years now. Just an awesome guy and a great artist. And I've been blessed to be with him for three albums now. Yeah, it's been great.
Chris, so speaking about like these times of coronavirus, how do you think this will affect future events? Do you think everything will go back to normal eventually? Will COVID maybe have a positive effect on live music events in the long term? What's your view on this?
Oh man, it's hard to say. I think, you know, we all have so much time to think about this that we all have probably similar views, but also maybe a little bit different. But, you know, it all really comes down to having large groups of people safely gather where we don't have to worry about getting sick. And that's the hardest part. So it's going to take until there is obviously a vaccine. It's implemented and spread around the world to everybody so that people are comfortable enough to go to shows. Now, that's not everywhere in the world. I know that we put tickets on sale for any show tomorrow. Some parts of the world, they would sell out immediately and everybody would go because they would take a chance because they've been cooped up so long. They want to get out and listen to live music, see their friends or whatever it is. But yeah, it's gonna change. I mean, to say normal, this might be it. There's going to be a new normal. They're going to have to be. I imagine there'll have to be safety checks. You know, they're talking about, are they going to try to do temperature checks, so on and so forth. And I think the best thing right now is to sit back and see what happens with live sports. Because sports are going to have to implement their audiences, and they have a lot more games happening worldwide that we can then see what model works and doesn't work for them and then implement that into live shows so that we can safely have a large gathering and everybody go back to what we used to know, which is enjoying a show, you know, being at a festival and seeing, you know, 10, 20, 30,000 people together again, you know. Or larger crowds. I'm not sure if they thought the minimized capacities, but I just hope that, you know, all these smart doctors and scientists and you know, lab technicians that are working hard on vaccine can find the right one, and soon.
So Chris, you have worked as tour manager and production manager as well. Which one do you prefer?
Now that I'm older, tour manager. There's a lot less lifting and sweating and working around all the heavy equipment all the time. They're both great. They both have challenges, and challenges are fun. But now that I'm a little bit older, I like being more the tour manager.
How do you manage your time when you're a production manager, like for a tour, for example, for with Nine Inch Nails? There's a lot of things, of course, that are going on. A lot of people you have to talk to, a lot of situations you have to. How do you organize your time with this? Do you have like any help, like technologically, with the apps or something like that? What recommend for like organizing in general, like your time in situations like this?
Well, on a technical level, what helps nowadays is technology is amazing. Emails, text, etc. It's almost too much. It's overwhelming. There's too many forms of communication. You know, when I started, we had a pager. And I had a pager, and I would have to tell the bus driver to pull over so I could find a payphone, because I had to call whoever just paged me because they said it was urgent. And then that graduated to fax machines. And anyway, technology is amazing now. The problem is, it can get abused quickly. But, you know, it's still very efficient and great. I remember the first time I advanced a show, a tour for Japan, and I didn't call my production guy, my local guy, one time. Instead, we just did it all via email. And I thought, oh, wow, this is really great. And then on the flight to Tokyo, I woke up halfway there in a complete panic, sweating. Oh, my gosh, is the stage going to be the right size I ordered? Did he get the lighting trusses laid out where I need them to be? All these things are running through my mind. And, of course, I landed, and it was a guy I've done many, many tours with. And, of course, he was like, oh, yeah, everything is here. Everything is fine. Look. And, of course, it was exactly right. So, you know, technology is great when it works for you, when it's not being abused and overwhelms you. But on the day-to-day side, it's all about having a great team. And, you know, everybody has to, it kind of goes back to the earlier question. Do you use the same people all the time? Well, yeah, you try to have a good team with you, because communication's key, and communication leads to good efficiency to manage your time and everyone else's time correctly. You know, everybody does things differently. There's no right or wrong way, as long as the job gets done and as efficiently as possible, where everybody knows what they're doing, and safely, of course.
Okay, Chris, this is a straight and direct question. How do you deal with unprofessional people and unprofessional behavior? Like, in less words, how do you deal with assholes?
Oh, yeah, that's funny. Somebody asked me this question just the other day, and it's funny. It's always been a very simple way of handling it for me. And when I see people who maybe aren't doing their job or being complacent or maybe causing problems, I usually just pull them aside and I ask them a very simple question, which is, do you want to be here? And if the answer is no, great. They go home immediately. I'll book them a ticket in 10 minutes. If they say, yeah, I want to be here, then we talk about why they're having a problem and try to work it out. So I think that question works for almost anybody in any facet of life. You know, if you find suddenly you're out of character in a situation, you can ask yourself, do I want to be here? And if the answer is yes, well, then get yourself back in character and figure out why, what you need to do to be there. You know, pretty simple. It's pretty simple, but effective. And I find it works pretty well.
Yeah, but like most people are not managing that kind of stress. Like a band is about to play. You have 60,000 people waiting for you. That moment must be really difficult.
In those moments, the show must go on, right? So you maybe will try to just tell somebody what they need to hear to get things done immediately so the show doesn't suffer, and then maybe address it with that question that I would ask of, do you want to be here after the show? But yeah, you're right. In your example, if we're about to call house lights, well, then of course, let's figure it out.
Chris, what about when you went to somewhere and the attitude is not that well, being in a festival or a show or whatever? You know what I mean? Like the production, like the local crew is not working like fast enough or whatever, or they told you lies or something? Because it happens a lot.
It does.
It happens a lot with big productions or mass productions that they say like, the station's right, don't worry, Rick is all right. And then you came and say like, hey, what the fuck, man?
Yeah, that's a tough scenario for everybody, because first of all, when you advance with somebody and you show up and it's not like it was, well, you know, feeling like you were misled, I don't want to say lied to, but maybe misled to that point, doesn't make for a good relationship. And so now you're already on a rocky relationship from the time you set foot, and now you know you've got to get through a show with this person. So you really just have to kind of take each scenario as it is. It's really tough, and we've all been in those scenarios countless amounts of times, and it really comes down to having a really good crew that can all jump in and pick up where there's a weak link. So if the local crew is not doing that well, then you have to kind of persuade your crew to work harder, knowing that it's going to pay off somewhere else. If, you know, it can go on and on. You know, one thing I always, when I have a meeting with my crew, and, you know, you have all your different departments, lighting, sound, you know, pyro, et cetera. I always tell those guys, hey, look, there's no lines in the sand. Every department's going to have a bad day. The other department that's having a good day is there to help you. And so if everybody kind of works together like that, then it makes it a lot easier. And so then when you have a team, like, you go and you travel somewhere and things aren't the way they were advanced or supposed to be, or there's not enough stagehands or so on and so forth, that's when you really have a team, and a team always pulls together to make it happen. I'm not saying it's easy, because it never is, but that's just what you have to do to get the show done sometimes. And, you know, you don't want the artist doesn't need to hear about that. They just want to know that the show's happening. Obviously, it's a bigger issue. I've had problems where we've showed up, we've advanced a fairly technical and heavy show, and we showed up and they switched out the roof system on us, and we had already done an engineering sign off and approval on a different roof structure, and so we had to completely change it on the fly at midnight on overnight London. The artist was not happy about it, but we could not factor or jeopardize safety at all. But, you know, things like that happen sometimes. So you have to think quick on your feet, try to come up with a solution.
What technological tools do you think work today for the job you do? And what things have never changed and will always be the same?
Oh, man, that's a great question. Well, pictures are something that we've always done, which is one of the best tools ever, you're trying to visualize a place you've not been, and it's a unique venue, or it's maybe not a square stage or a rectangular stage. And some people can send you pictures. That's happened since, you know, before email and the old mail system. That's always a great piece of technology, because now you can visualize something, and visualizing something is key to trying to understand what you're trying to achieve, where you're going. The technology nowadays, though, with things like Zoom that we're on now, which is incredible. I've done some of the interactive conference calls where we can put a plan view of a venue, we'll say, or a stage, and everybody can collaborate on the drawing, and you can mark it up and say, oh, I want to move it over here. It's almost like you're playing a game of tic-tac-toe. But it's fantastic technology, and it's great. And it's, you know, for when you can't visualize things, it's amazing. So, and where's it going to go? I mean, I don't know. Is it going to go to a point where we don't even have live concerts anymore, and everybody, you know, somehow is, it steps on a pod like in Star Trek, and they're zoomed to the artist's living room, and they can have a show with them right there virtually, but it feels like they're there? I don't know. That's a good question. It's a good question. That's for people who are much smarter than me to figure out. But when they figure it out, I'll be happy to try it and see if it works for me.
Sometimes when you're the leader of your crew or your people, sometimes you become like the psychological of the tour, like the Dr. Wellness mind people, right? You know what I mean? Like, what advice can you tell us to deal with this situation? You know, like, the light guy is always telling something, sound engineer is telling something, and you're in the middle of it. Mm. And you have to push everyone and say, like, everything is cool. What kind of advice can you give us?
Oh, man, that's hard, because there's so many different personalities that clash sometimes out there. And, you know, sometimes there's people who just don't work out, and you've got to get them out, because a bad apple can ruin a whole bunch. But for the most part, you get really great people. I approach things with humor, or I try to now that I'm older. When I was younger, I probably yelled too much and was too serious, because I didn't know what the hell I was doing, like most people who yell. But now I like to approach it with humor, because if you can get people to smile, then you can automatically get people to realize, okay, you know, things aren't so bad. And I think that's a great approach. And I try to, every time I walk into a building, I try to leave saying, you know, knowing that I did the best I could to make everybody as happy as they could be that day. So the next time I come back and we have to work with all those people again, they know us and we all have a better day. You know, it's all about establishing relationships, but, you know, humor's great. You know, you can't take your job. You got to take your job seriously, but don't take yourself too seriously. And that goes for other people that are having tough times.
So Chris, life on tour has its good and bad moments. There are issues always, no, like professional, personal, health, marriage, kids. What advice could you give us for healthy life on tour and not go into a downward spiral when we get home? No.
Yeah, that's, you know, that's tricky. You know, the road's not for everybody. The road's not for everybody. I've sent home caterers before because they missed their dog. I had a truck driver who was crying. He missed his family after the second day. Like, it's not for everybody. But you know, to stay healthy out there and be traveling with the same group for a very long time, you've got to find, you know, the people that you can relate to. That way you know, essentially they become your friend or your tour mate. And those are the people maybe you hang out on a day off and people you can have personal conversations, because it's important not to have a little bit of mental break on a day off and be able to talk to somebody that knows what you're experiencing firsthand, but also you can share your other life that you have back at home, you know, and that's an important thing. And the more of those people you have out there, which would be your allies, the easier the trip would be, so that, you know, you're, whatever you have going on at home, you can try to ease whatever tension there might be, et cetera. But it's just not for everybody. It's hard. It's no different than any, you know, for pilots or business people who have to be on the road a lot. You know, you just have to try to find what works for you. Back to the, you know, full circle of technology, it's great because boom, you can press a button and there's your family in front of you, your significant other, or, you know, you can Skype with your cat for a half an hour or whatever you want to do.
Bonus track, one song.
Yeah.
There's a really good one that you like a lot. Could you tell why and tell us a story about the song? And
yeah, totally. So when you asked me to pick a bonus track, I had to think back to, okay, first of all, we're listening to the Downward Spiral, which came out in 1994. And I was actually on tour then as a drum tech with a band called Helmet. And we had a day off in Columbus, Ohio. And we went to go see the Downward Spiral tour. And it blew my mind. Absolutely blew my mind. So in thinking, you know, I do live shows, I was able to find a live recording from that tour that Helmet recorded touring with the Rollins Band at the time in July, I believe it was July in 1994, Los Angeles, the Grand Olympic Auditorium, which was designed for boxing and is probably the worst sounding place ever to do a recording. Alejandro would attest to that. But the recording nonetheless still is pretty darn awesome and pretty darn powerful. So I thought this whole conversation, let's take it full circle. I saw the Downward Spiral tour on this tour that you're going to hear. And miraculously, 19 years later, I was Trent Reznor's production manager. So it's a small world.
So, Chris, could you please present the song?
Yeah, absolutely. So on the tour in 1994, the band wrote a song with House of Pain called Just Another Victim. And they closed every set that summer with this song. And that's what you're about to hear. Live recording from Los Angeles, summer 1994, Helmet, Just Another Victim.
I love Helmet.
Man, you're hard-pressed to find anyone who doesn't like Helmet. What a great band from back then.
They defined groove in all its sense.
For sure, for sure. And maybe made popular by Beavis and Butthead.
Okay, Chris, three tips when you're going out on tour, three tips you could give a production manager.
Assemble a good team and respect them so that they respect you back. Clear communication is a huge part of getting your job done, and being as nice and humorous as you can.
What was humor?
Yeah, I think humor helps a lot. And, you know, especially with what we're all going through right now, a little humor leads to a little love, and the world could use a little love right now.
Talking about the tension tour?
Yeah.
Could you tell us about the tech specs, around the visuals, how it was operated? You'll have the sync with the music?
Yeah. Well, of the tension tour, there was, I think we had six different sets that we rehearsed. So each one was different, most with video, some without. So they were all a little bit different. You know, everything, primarily the nuts and bolts to it all was, you know, we had Pro Tools, obviously, which is the backbone to the audio that the band are playing with, right? And then also the Pro Tools is also talking to the lighting. And then that's ultimately talking to the video. So that way you can get everything all together. One cue starts a song kind of thing. And it spreads all the way down. It was pretty amazing. It took a lot of work and a lot of rehearsals to get everything dialed in. But we had the right people and the right team to do it. There were a lot of things besides that that were some technical things with video that was being done that people were basically writing on the fly at rehearsals. Like, we're talking proprietary things that had never been done before, and then implementing that into the show. It was really incredible. And what these people were writing code and putting it all together, I have no idea how they were doing it. All I was doing is trying to help them out to get the job done. But watching it get done and implemented and seeing the final product was amazing. Yeah, I didn't have time to try to learn what they were doing. I had enough going on of juggling all the parts to try to get everybody to come together into one show. But it was some great stuff, some really great stuff. Like, and a lot of challenges because, you know, when you're dealing with something that hasn't been done before and you have a deadline of 7 days, how long does it take? How long does it take to do something that's never been done before?
Well, of course.
It has to happen within 7 days. That's the answer. Yeah, kind of the referee of all the teams to get them all to work together to come, you know, they all have to have their separate work schedules and then bring it all together to one big show, you know. It's fun. Logistics, all those challenges, they're fantastic. I love that stuff. The show finishes and you hear the crowd go crazy and, you know, you see the artists happy. And yeah, you cannot put a value on that at all. It's absolutely incredible.
Chris, we're talking about like your days off in another question. And as a production manager, you really don't have that much time of days off. No, how do you organize your time so you really have like that? What advice can you give people to really have like your time really well organized as to have those days off? No.
Well, production managers never have days off. We call them days without shows. I think it's funny, people that would always say, oh, it must be great. You're on the road all the time and traveling. You must see so many things. It's like, yeah, I think I was in Paris the seventh time before I saw the Eiffel Tower. And the only reason I saw it is because it was next to the TV studio we were filming in. But for production managers, a day without a show means all you're doing is maybe catching up on rest, but also catching up on emails, phone calls for all the upcoming shows, right? For everyone else who doesn't have that advanced responsibility and is just out there working a job that has a day-to-day responsibility, well, then a day off is whatever you want it to be. Catch up with what's going on at home, go for a walk, maybe have a nice meal, and sort of reset your mind, you know? And we have a lot of crew who maybe are photographers, so they take advantage of going out and getting great photos of places, and other people who are foodies, so they look up great restaurants that they want to go try. And, you know, that's one of the perks of being paid to travel, is if you have the time, you can take advantage to fill in whatever you like to do, you know, sample nice wines, whatever it is, see an old friend, you know. But yeah, for production managers, tour managers, it's hard. It's a day without a show.
Okay, Chris, so this is the last question. What active or non-active band would you have loved to work with?
Oh, man. That's a pretty good question. I think that's a great question, actually. And I think for me, the one thing that I'm probably the most bummed about that I never got to see this person live and always wanted to work with him was Tom Petty. I know a lot of people who worked with him, and we, you know, crossed up and down the road, but I never had the opportunity to see him perform live, and I would have loved to have done that. And moreover, I would have loved to have the opportunity to work for him, because I hear he's a great guy, and obviously his music is just incredible. That's my answer, hands down, Tom Petty.
Well, thank you, Chris, for being here with us tonight, spending some time listening to some great record.
Yeah.
This is the Don Brown Spiral. Gracias a todos por estar aquí conectados con nosotros aquí en medio de esta pandemia, a ver si hacemos algo para por lo menos entretenernos un rato y pasarla bien escuchando musiquita. Thank you, Chris, for being with us, for spending your time with us, and for listening to that record, and for pick that song.
Thanks for having me, guys. Really, that was fun.
Bueno, chicos, un placer haber estado con todos ustedes. Disfruten, pasen rico, disfruten la pandemia, vean pelis y escuchen música, pásenla bien.
Chris, thank you so much, man. It was a pleasure.
Hey, thanks you. All you guys.
Thank you, Chris. It was you were really nice, and all your answers were just like really eye-opening. Thank you.
Thanks, everybody. Be safe and smile.